Hello, and welcome to another episode of Envisioneering Exchange, the podcast where industry leaders discuss the most important topics in sustainability, climate change, buildings, and urban efficiency. I'm Vic Marinich from Danfoss, and I'm delighted to be the host of this podcast. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Captivate, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today we have Kimo Rauma, Vice President of Danfoss Editron, here to talk to us about the electric vehicles and policies and infrastructure needed for widespread adoption. Kimo, thanks for taking the time to join the show.
Thank you, Vic. Happy to be here.
So maybe to kick things off, can you tell us a bit more about your background, the work you're currently doing in the EV space?
So my background is quite long-term in this industry. Of course, I'm an entrepreneur as a background and have done more than 10 different companies in different industries, but started in the electrification about 17 years ago, actually working in that time for Wacon, which is now part of Danfoss Drives, there for the drive side and software. But then founded a company which was called Vicedo, which was focusing solely on the electric powertrains of heavy-duty machines, and started in 2010, which was really the early days of the electrification. And basically, the first machines were just built or going to be built in the coming years. And yeah, since that, I run the business from being alone to the team of 10, and then finally going to the, let's say, number one in the world in this segment, and happy to be acquired by Danfoss to have a huge home for the company and then let the electrification inside Danfoss.
So this is a bit of a different topic than what we normally cover. We do a lot around refrigeration, air conditioning, and so on. So maybe as we talk to electric vehicles, maybe to kind of get everybody grounded, maybe can you give a quick overview where we are today with all the different technologies and the powertrains that we have out there, right? I mean, we know there's, you mentioned electric vehicles, but of course, you know, we hear fuel cells. There's a good old internal combustion engine, internal combustion with hydrogen. There's so many different options out there. Can you maybe give a quick overview?
Yeah, if you take the different fuels that can be used in the combustion engines, they want to use it to make sure that the combustion engines are still there and they can be used in the sustainable world. So you have biofuels or you can use hydrogen directly, whatever. And of course, if you ask from me, to burn something, to move something is from the Stone Age. So certainly human beings can be more clever than that we are doing explosions to move vehicles around. So maybe that's something that is there for certain niche applications, but still okay. In the physics, we have a better ways to do it. And then we talk about fuel cells or batteries. That's of course then just at where we store the energy. Because if you think about the fossil fuels, that's the most constant way to store the energy, and then you get the long hours. Then the next best is then the hydrogen, liquid form or gas form. It's still more condensed way of storing it to the vehicle than then the battery. Still, it's a largest and heaviest, and then of course it's an expensive one still in the investment. So for the certain time being, we will see them all. The question is still that then in the end, we all know that the most simplest and cost efficient is probably going to win this game. And if you have electricity, using that directly will give you the highest efficiency in the total and lowest losses, which means that then the energy we produce is used to the production in the maximum way. So the electric vehicles, pure electric vehicles in that form, if it's possible, then that's what is going to be used. But then there is long time before we have chargers and the infrastructure everywhere, which means that we need to be certain that we will be able to support all the forms for our customers, regardless are they the best ones in the end game.
Mm-hmm, right.
Hopefully that really short answer gave you a little bit insight of what it is out there.
It did. And of course, it also brought up other questions, right? Because you mentioned that the simplest, easiest, most efficient solution will ultimately win. And, you know, I think we all agree on that. But when we say win, could it be different? I mean, we have on highway, off highway vehicles, commercial vehicles, medium, heavy duty, right? There's so many different things. I imagine what might win for a small, electric bike will be very different than what wins for, a big crane or something like this. So how do you see things breaking out in those different applications?
Yeah, I think that you are totally correct. And if we look the short term, for sure, you cannot have enough batteries in a big marine vessel to move the cargo and the batteries to go overseas. That's not feasible at the moment. So there, the answer is then to go for hydrogen, which is also taking probably too much. And then the current solution is that it will be ammonium that is then used as a base fuel. Then. And that's just that the physics gives us the answers. And that's a good thing because it's equal and fair to every one of us that we cannot change that one. And then when we go to the smaller off-highway machines that would be used in your yard, the small excavator that you would rent for a while. Well, why wouldn't you plug it in that you don't need to play with the oils and fossil fuels? Because you will use it probably 2 hours to make something small to your yard. And any battery would be enough to satisfy your needs there. So then for sure, that would be the most straightforward way to do it and go for it. So I would say that every time you need to look the application, how it's used, and also a lot of customers have their own beliefs. This is not also something that is right or wrong. There is such strong leaders with strong beliefs. And yeah, as you know, in any market and commercial market, the best technology might not win. It might be, but some technology is just breaking through the market, gets the volume behind, and then the cost drops so dramatically compared to other ones that it just win. And we need to be ready for that regardless as an engineer, do I think that that was best for the world or not?
Yeah, so complicated answer. And maybe it's not just about the technology, but also the time horizon we're considering, right? Because like you said, the big ocean going container ships are going to take a lot longer to convert than some of the smaller vehicles. So there'll be maybe 10 steps before those ocean-going containers get there and some stuff we get there today. So, but it sounds like we want to keep plugging in the same direction. So we think there's technology that'll eventually get there to support electric vehicles en masse. So in that regard then, what do you see as some of the current barriers to adopting electric vehicles faster than they are now?
Well, of course, there is the fact and belief of charging. So that's typically the answer that you get, that the charging infrastructure is not there. So then I cannot have an electric vehicle because then I cannot charge it where I want, when I want, fast enough I want. And of course, there's some truth about it, but it's also sometimes people forget that if I take just the easy idea of your personal passenger car, also the behavior is different. Now, when you have a fossil fuel, you cannot refill your tank at home. You always need to go somewhere to recharge it. But with the electric vehicle, you recharge it at home when you are sleeping. So actually, there is more time saved with the short distances as you never charge it elsewhere than at your home or the depot on the working place where you go. So also that's different. But so there's a lot to do just with the mindset change of the people that is the barrier. At the same time, yes, there is technological barriers. If you take the electric trucks, for example, how you can have an electric truck for your operations if you cannot charge it, neither your own depot, the place that you hold them, nor when you are going to the customer side and unloading the truck where you should at the same time charge it. But if you think about many of the places or most of the places today, there is no charging position. And also the how many of the companies that take trucks to deliver the stuff are willing to invest $2 million for the fast charger for the heavy duty? Not many. So there needs to be solutions in place. And just to give here internal commercial, of course, then the solution like our new charger called ED3 is just the answer for that one, because that's now onboard charger and you can directly plug it into any industrial grid, regardless is there a charger or not. And then you can charge the heavy-duty vehicle at the place that you are loading, unloading, or moving it.
Yeah, and I think you maybe didn't say direct, right? But I have to imagine at least at this stage of the game, costs are probably also a big consideration, right? A first cost, that is, on the investment side. And there are some things here in the U.S. that we're doing to try to help close that gap. So we know we have the Inflation Reduction Act, and that's included some funding and incentives for the adoption of electric vehicles. And the goal of the act is to get half of all vehicles sold in 2030 to be electric. So for that to happen, you touched on it a little bit, but okay, we have the charging stations themselves, but what other kind of infrastructure changes are going to be needed to meet a goal like that?
Yeah. And thanks for that. I will also touch for the cost of the, and where it comes that it's the batteries. And that's of course the fact. At the moment, the cost is higher and still quite significantly higher than standard combustion engine based. And yes, it's always that you need to have the volume to have the basically whole supply chain and industry to cut and drive the cost down. It will come. And that's why we need this kind of subsidies in place to drive the market to the right direction, to generate the economics behind it. And that will then boost the market. At the moment, still, it's clear that there is big barriers, what I see, especially in US. If you think about that, the grid is based a single phase, quite, let's say, unstable grid compared to the European side. So US grid is a different type of structure. And also, if you think about the apartments and big store houses, there is just not connections that are strong enough for electric grids. If you have there 100 cars, and we know that we typically come home at the same time from the work, relatively speaking, which means that then you really need to have the charging power in place, because then you are really disappointed if you don't get it. And those kind of changes to the big buildings are huge. That's not a small thing to change that. Still, the private houses, private owned houses, yeah, there you have your own grid, and yeah, you can charge it, you can put it in your own garage. But that's a minimum part of the, let's say, total amount of the cars. The cars are mainly in the highly dense habited areas, which creates that. And the public transportation in US is not so widely used. And of course, here, I would say, as a European living in US, I can see that also the mindset of the expectation of the size of the car is totally different. And making these big vehicles like Ram or whatever you see there on the traffic, mainly even in the normal daily shopping use, yeah, that's just too big to be driven with electric, because the waste of the energy is enormous. So that needs to be changed on the people mindset about what kind of car I want to have and want to use in my normal living. And I would say that that would be probably my biggest obstacle in the US, really, the expectation of the size of the car, the behaviors of the car. Yeah, and that's natural. We all are used to our environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a long history with Americans and cars and going back many, many years. So that for sure is a challenge, right? I don't think that's a technology solution in that to solve. Maybe a nice MP3 that can make the car sound cool when you turn it on or something,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And please make it sound good. Yeah.
Exactly. And even I'm an electric car, I need to admit, the electric vehicle doesn't feel the same.
Right.
And it's also because, yeah, what we learned as small kids, we were playing with our small cars. Yeah, it was that you make the sound like,
right.
Okay, how you play with the cars in modern days? Like silently?
That's right.
Okay, that doesn't make you to live with the feeling. And that's natural.
Yeah. So we know we have some infrastructure and that's big national issues that we need to address. And from the policy perspective, I think a lot of the stuff is focused these days on the federal government and things that that they can do. But there's probably a lot more that can be done, you know, at the state, city, and even individual utility levels. So can you maybe talk a bit about how industry is involved in the state and local government levels and what kind of role those governments play, the utilities, in EV adoption?
Yeah, I think that first thing, of course, is the subsidies, but that's a relatively small, as that will not drive really the behavior. If we take an example from Norway, they just decided that, okay, you can use the what it is, these lanes in the highways that you can drive with the extra payment.
Well, like the Easy Pass lanes or the HOV.
High occupancy vehicle lanes. So exactly. And nobody decided that with EVs, you can drive always with those ones, but not without. Parking places in central of the cities, they are only for EVs. Otherwise, you need to pay tremendous extra. And then in the end, they just said that, okay, you cannot enter to the city centers at all with the ICE cars. And if you take it from the health perspective, okay, that's the right thing to do. But I would like to see what kind of riot would come up if the Denver would say that, hey, sorry, you are not coming inside the city anymore. So avalanche game is on, but only with electric cars. But those kind of things is, of course, doable. Where I see it more important is to influence to the areas that is not private people that much, like school buses. Trucks, all of this kind of heavy-duty part, which is clearly driven by the society. Like now of the Inflation Act is that Biden government put $2.6 billion to electrify all the school buses. That's something that is easy. First of all, our kids are in a more healthy environment. Not only because there is no gasoline anymore and fumes there, it's also because they are more silent and reliable as a buses. So that's like easy thing. And when this has come around, then people start to think, so actually why we have the other things not silent and clean? So you need to start, and I think that the governments and the states could do much more on that side and go with the public transport, go with those things that they can be in control. And yeah, then the next step, like, okay, the construction side, if it's inside the city, why we allow basically the fuels to be used there? Why don't we say that it's not okay where we have habited areas? And also the sound problem. We all know how construction sites are and their generators, they are all the time on. So why don't make a silent? That's something that you can drive with the government and put there also clear. And then you can drive the market. You don't need to put subsidies because you are the customer and you are buying only the things that are already for the better future. And I would say that that's much more important than try to force the standard Texas strong male to change the pickup truck to the small EV car.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, if you kind of reflect back on what you're saying, right? I mean, in any case, if you want to try to drive a change in behavior, right, you can either use the carrot or the stick, right? And it sounds like, you know, I think a lot of those good ideas were the carrot, right? You know, easy parking downtown, or if you have the electric vehicle, or access to the downtown during rush hour, all that kind of stuff. So it's more the benefits that you can get, or, you know, close parking in the shopping mall or whatever it is. And then, of course, if you're the consumer, and the governments are very big consumers of all kinds of things, whether it's the air conditioning, bus fleets, you name it, right? They can drive the change through their own habits as well, right? And then you don't have to worry so much about the stick part, right? And worrying for sure not now about, like you said, right? If you said, okay, we have a Denver Broncos game, and but you're not allowed in with a internal combustion engine, then we have a mutiny. But rather to give the incentives for people to either take mass transit or to bring the EV and that stuff. So that's the whole point of the Inflation Reduction Act, right? It's the carrot, the incentives to get those things done. So that's, interesting that it seems that's kind of the space we're in now, is looking to get the incentives for people to change, to get the volume. Because, I mean, you can make a law that forces people to do lots of stuff, but in the end, if they don't want to do it, it'll be a failure anyway, right?
Yeah. And just because regardless do we want or not, electrification is the end game. It's just de facto that there is no other media in the physics known that has so high efficiency from the used energy to the production or action or work that we want to do. So without the question, if we want to live on this planet, there is no other way than basically electrify everything that is moving. The question is just the time, and do we do it fast enough? So I think that we have still time for the carrot, but if it's not moving, then there is no other way than just put heavy legislations on. And yeah, we know that the companies doesn't change before it is you are forced to, because yeah, it's written in the law that my primary target is to make money out of the operations, and there needs to be clear business incentive. either is to lose the business or earn more. And yeah, those are the rules that we have built in this world, and governments and legal side need to decide that how to use it.
If we get a bit more now into the weeds here, into the details, so we talk about this move towards electrification, that's going to increase the demand on the grid. And I think that puts a lot more attention and focus on demand response, right? And so how do you see that being implemented on a broader scale to alleviate some of these challenges we talked about?
Let me say that, first of all, my belief is that there will be infinite amount of free energy and green energy available in the, let's say, not in the near future, but a little bit more in the future. Just because solar is the primary energy that comes to the Earth, and by only 10% of our planet's surface used in the solar panels, it's fulfilling plenty of our all energy needs. So I don't believe that there is a lack of the green energy. It's just that how fast we can implement it, and also then that the grids are local, not like largely globally. If we take that, that it needs to be that we will then have a local generation, like let's say in any state they have more local, and then there's energy storage to balance it, and not such that we have such a big nuclear power somewhere and then we have a strong grid towards the whole continent to make sure that everybody gets their energy from one single huge source of energy. So that will change, and I think that that's in a really fast phase to come, because everyone can calculate that the electricity prices, especially in Europe, they are rising super fast, and the payback time for your own energy generation is coming fastly down. So yeah, I know already a couple of my friends have totally built an independent, energy independent house that's truly doable already today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably not so much here in the U.S., or at least I don't know that that's so big a trend. So I think we will be having to kind of work through the issues on demand response until we get that equilibrium, right? Like you said, or where we have enough green energy to really meet all demands all the time, right? But I think there's going to, like you said, it won't be short term. So how do we kind of balance that gap in the short and medium term?
I think that the short, medium term, yeah, there will be a balance between the traditional high power energy built more in a right scale. And then of course, the energy storages will play a big role, as there is plenty of energy available in the system in the nighttime when it's not used at all. So there will be the fastest market part will be in the energy storages that balance it. That will certainly be the one. And then after that, it becomes a little bit more obsolete because of the opportunity to have the different kind of generation from different areas more stably. So it will be an interesting one, and that will come faster than we expect. Especially now we can see the trend change super fast in Europe, where the crisis in Ukraine drove the Europe out of the cheap gas from the Russia. And now it is clear that any kind of green energy built into the system is having a short payback time. And with this place, it all again drives the economy higher and then drops the cost on that one, and then it will be used elsewhere as well. So I think that that in the bad things, there is always a silver lining, and it generates good things to the other side.
You kind of mentioned, right, that market is moving super fast, and you sitting in the center of it, certainly, I think, see that probably better than most of us. So if you put on your magic glasses and look into the future, how do you see the electric vehicle market and technology evolving over the next couple of years? What can we expect?
Well, first of all, what we will see is that this kind of government-driven path will be coming much more fast. There will be much more legislation and restrictions to push. So the carrot is out because everybody has tried the subsidies, and we will see that there will be more restrictions if you are not having a, let's say, clean vehicles. The second thing is that trucks, for example, we will see a lot of them in the electric truck side. The buses we know already, basically, they will be overflown by the electrification. It's so obvious, like the school buses that run fully with the electric, there's no problems, you can charge them, and that will just be changed. So it is a change. if you looked a couple of years, it's a good if you have an opportunity to travel to Shanghai. It was locked long time, and also I couldn't visit there for 3 years. And now when I went back a few months ago, that is totally changed. Most of the cars are electric already. You cannot believe how it feels to be inside a 10 million, multi-million city with full of cars, but there is no gasoline fumes and there is no sound, and still you are surrounded by it. You can talk to the person next to you. Also, the air is easy to breathe, so you can really feel that, okay, this is how the cities will look like. So I would say that this is one of the cities that is already showing, and we know that Chinese is really in force of the electrification on that side. But you can really feel and see what we will see in our cities in a couple of years.
I think that wraps up all the questions I've had. Thanks, Kimo. But is there maybe any final closing statements or comments you want to make before we sign off?
Yeah, maybe just to mention about the off-highway and that industry, that it's not in the couple of years that it's coming fast, but it's coming in a really steady pace. And in Power Solutions, our job is to make sure that when the hydraulics is replaced by electric systems, we serve our customers through Danfoss, and we keep the share of wallet and business to our customers, and even maybe serve them with the bigger business than before. And that's our major task. So when we talk about on-highway, trucks, buses, all of that is a nice addition to create us the economy, create us the scale and volume. But our core is to make sure that our current business in off-highway is secure to the future, and we have the place in this surrounding an economy and this world in the future as well when it's fully electric. And we are well doing our job in that. So we will have a bright future.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks. So that's it for this episode of Envisioneering Exchange. I'd like to thank my guest, Kimo Rauma from Danfoss Editron, for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to Envisioneering Exchange on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Captivate, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And lastly, if you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to rate, review, and share it with your network. Thanks for listening, and talk to you all next time. Thanks, Kimo.
Thank you, Vic.
This podcast is for information purposes only. The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Envisioneering Exchange podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and not necessarily represent those of Danfoss LLC and its employees. Danfoss LLC is not responsible and does not verify for accuracy any of the information contained in the podcast series available for listening on this site. This podcast series does not constitute professional advice or services. This podcast, including Danfoss LLC and the producers, disclaim responsibility from any possible adverse effects of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and Danfoss LLC in this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility of statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about the guest qualifications or credibility. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute this podcast. The developers of the Envisioneering Exchange podcast site assume no liability for any activities in connection with this podcast or for use of this podcast in connection with any other website, computer, or playing device.